From claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt.
EWTN Radio presents The Miracle Hunter with Michael O'Neill.
Welcome to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. Well, the world of miracle-interested people are still a chatter about this recent news related to Medjugorje, the alleged apparition starting in 1981. And this was big news coming out of the Vatican last week. I was able to attend that press conference virtually and as part of the press member being with EWTN, and I got to hear Cardinal Victor Fernandez releasing those that new judgment, the first judgment since 1981, related to those long-running Marian apparitions being claimed in Medjugorje. And of course, as followers of this and others have assuredly have seen in all the reporting that's been going on about this, there was the approval from the Vatican of the faith expression, you might say, or engaging in the devotion related to Our Lady, Queen of Peace of Medjugorje. And, but they did not release any kind of positive assessment of the supernatural character and included a statement or a commentary from the Pope, you might say, as related by Cardinal Fernandez, who said, not at all will there be an opportunity for Pope Francis to declare this supernatural in the future. And nihil obstat, the judgment of nothing obstructs, will be the one that stands in the way. So this was the big news. I've been doing a lot of interviews about this, a lot of conversations with family and friends and others who are interested in Medjugorje, perhaps devotees of Medjugorje. People on all parts of that spectrum have been wanting to reflect on this big news that came up. And so today we're going to be speaking with Dr. Robert Festigi, in my estimation, one of the very top Mariologists in the United States. And he's a professor of Mariology at Sacred Heart and Major Seminary, co-author of the book Virgin, Mother, and Queen with me through Ave Maria Press. We'll be excited to get his take on this. We talked last week with Dr. Mark Miravalli. So these are two of the heavy hitters, in my opinion, as far as Mariologists go. So we're getting the input of everyone that we can related to this big news about Medjugorje. Later in the program, we'll be speaking with Father Eliseo Gonzalez. He's the vice postulator for the Bishop Gallegos, Alphonse Gallegos canonization cause. And we worked with him to create an episode of They Might Be Saints in the past. And he's going to give us an update on where that cause of the Bishop of the Barrio stands. So we're looking forward to that conversation with Father Eliseo in just a little bit. Check out my series, Explore with the Miracle Hunter. One of the newer episodes about London is coming up. We explore historic London and walk in the footsteps of St. Thomas Becket, whose remarkable life and heroic death were followed with an overflowing of grace and miraculous events. And that's tonight at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on EWTN Television. You can also check that one out if you go to the on-demand, free on-demand service of EWTN, ondemand.ewtn.com. Later in the show, we'll be talking about the might-be saint of the day. For today's date, we have Blessed Francis Piani, who lived from 1424 to 1507 in Italy. In the 365 Days with Mary project, where we look at the Marian devotions of the day, for today's date, we have Our Lady of the Ash in Grado in Spain in the 17th century. And the question of the week, why does the Dicastery for the Causes of Saints approve miracles for sainthood causes, but the DDF, the Dicastery for the Doctrine of the Faith for Marian apparitions, does not approve miracles? That's an impossible question. I'm going to try to answer that one later in the show. And the miracle of the day occurred on September 24th, 1616, in Italy, in Berzo Inferiore, with the visionary Marta Damioli, a vision of the Virgin Mary. So we'll be talking about that in just a little bit. Let's take a look at the miracle news. Of course, as I mentioned, the big miracle news that's been buzzing since last week relates to Medjugorje. There's been a plethora of articles on the National Catholic Register and otherwise about these apparitions and the visionaries, etc. But there's other news happening as well. In England, the Augustinians returned to the Walsingham Shrine after five centuries. So three Nigerian friars of the Augustinian order will take up permanent roles as ministers to pilgrims at the storied Walsingham Shrine. And we filmed there just about a year and a half ago, or 2 years ago, and that is an episode of Explore. You can check that one out on demand. The Nigerian Augustinian friars are making history, bringing their order back to the Catholic National Shrine and Basilica of Our Lady of Walsingham in England. The site was one of the largest Catholic pilgrimage sites in Europe, but it was destroyed during the English Reformation nearly 500 years ago. And it's been reported that the friars will be working at the shrine starting in October 2024 and will be permanent members of the shrine team. This is the first time Augustinians have been assigned to the shrine on a permanent basis since it was ruined in the year 1538, so this is a long time coming. It was then, too, that the English Protestants forcibly disbanded the community of Augustinians. In the 16th century, the priory buildings of Walsingham Abbey were destroyed as part of the dissolution of the monasteries, which came at the order of King Henry VIII. Today, all that remains of the storied Catholic structure is a single arch from the eastern side, but this has remained a popular pilgrimage and tourist site since the 19th century. And so we see a statement from the shrine director. He said, "We give thanks to Almighty God, Our Lady of Walsingham, and St. Augustine of Hippo, that we can soon rejoice in the restoration of the spirituality and service of the Augustinian order to a restored and vibrant holy shrine and place of pilgrimage today." That was Reverend Dr. Robert Billing said that as well. So check that one out. I posted that article to the Facebook page of The Miracle Hunter. You can connect with any of the followers there and follow the miracle stories that I post there each and every day of the calendar year. Let's take a look at Catholic Pub Trivia. We do this every week where we ask a trivia question and give out a prize to an emailer that writes in the fastest with the correct answer. Last week, we had the question, what was the last apparition approved as supernatural by Rome? And we, of course, asked that question because maybe there'll be no more apparitions ever approved as supernatural by Rome, according to these new norms that came out in May. But what was the last one? And the answer to that question was Kabeho in Rwanda in 1981 that predicted the Rwandan genocide. And that's been approved by the local bishop and recognized by Rome as supernatural. So this is perhaps the last case we will ever see in history. Maybe not. But the question for this week, we talked today about Alphonse Gallegos, who served in California. And the trivia question for this week is, which California city has the rosary as part of its design, the design of its official seal? Again, we're talking about Bishop Gallegos from California. Which California city has the rosary as part of the design of its official seal? If you think you know that answer and want to win the prize, the image of the faces of Mary, send me an email to questions@miraclehunter.com, and maybe you'll be the fastest, and the answers and winners will be posted on the show page on miraclehunter.com. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be talking with Dr. Robert Festigi about the brand new document from Rome about the alleged apparitions at Medjugorje. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. We had big news coming out of the Vatican this past week, news that some people perhaps have been waiting for since 1981, which was the advent or beginning of the Marian apparitions that have been claimed in Medjugorje, that place in the former Yugoslavia, Bosnia-Herzegovina. Six children, now adults, claimed visions of Mary starting in 1981, and that has persisted until the current day. And there's been statements from the local bishop, statements of non-supernaturality, and there's been a commission in 1991 from the Yugoslavian bishops that released a statement of a known constat, which is maybe the maybe category, the yellow light, we might say, where there wasn't an approval, it wasn't a condemnation. And then we see in the year 2010, the Ruini Commission that was instituted in order to investigate these apparitions that have been happening, according to the reports, in Medjugorje for all these years. And so I think many people have been waiting for some news out of Rome, some sort of recognition, or either positive or negative. The Pope has set up an apostolic administrator there in Medjugorje, meaning some representative of the Vatican is resident there in Medjugorje to oversee things and keep an eye on things, perhaps, for the Vatican. We also see the Pope having released messages for the Youth Day Festival, those big gatherings there. And over the years, there have been as many as 50 million pilgrims who have gone there. So they've had big crowds and many spiritual blessings as well, conversions, healings, and vocations. And some of those spiritual fruits is what was recognized by Rome in this recent document. But the question is, with this document, is it everything that we think it was? Is it, we think this is the final say on Medjugorje. That was the statement from Cardinal Victor Fernandez. He said there will be no further statement from the Pope related to the supernaturality of this. The case is closed, apparently. So this is big news. But again, Many people are rejoicing about this, but is everything as it seems? So we welcome to the program today a true expert on Mariology. He's a professor of Mariology from Sacred Heart Major Seminary. He's co-author of a book with me, Virgin Mother Queen, from Ave Maria Press, a book about Marian apparitions, and that is Dr. Robert Festigi. Welcome back to the program, Dr. Robert.
Oh, well, thank you very much, Michael. It's my honor and to be with you, and thank you for all the good work you're doing.
Thank you. And you're, of course, one of the first people that come to mind when big news like this comes out. And perhaps this is the biggest press conference related to miracles since the Fatima secret was revealed in the year 2000. I think this was big news that many people were holding their breath for. And this sort of just came up on the heels of those new norms being released in May. But I wanted to get your take on it. When you heard... I know that you tuned in for that early morning press conference. You could watch it online, the one coming out of Rome. When you heard that it was a statement of nihil obstat, which is the highest level of approval now, were you surprised when the Vatican released that statement?
You know, actually, I was a little bit surprised because some people were saying, oh, well, these, you know, six categories, maybe there's going to be something about Medjugorje on the second or the third, you know, that it's under observation or it's, you have to have some caution about it. And I also know some people who, for whatever reason, they're just opposed to Medjugorje. And one Mariologist said, I hope the whole thing is just shut down. But the Pope had given approval for pilgrimages, even led by bishops and priests there. And I'm somewhat conservative, you know. I say, well, I like to study the ones that have been approved, you know, Fatima, Lourdes, you know, La Salette, and Miraculous Medal, and so on. But I was very happy that so many beautiful messages from Medjugorje were produced in this like 17 or 18 page note, and so I think it's going to change some people's minds about Medjugorje, but it shows that the Holy See is concerned about the spiritual benefit and understanding that there has been emphasis upon truly Catholic devotion, Eucharist, confession, prayer, fasting, reconciliation, and, of course, the love of the identification of the Gospel, of Mary as Queen of Peace. So Cardinal Fernandez expressed this, and also the note from the Dicastery for the Doctrine of the Faith expressed this. So I think that some people who were opposed to Medjugorje might change their minds. Now, some who are very, very deep devotees of Medjugorje have said, well, why can't the supernatural be affirmed? But that was decided in May 17th of this year with the new norms. So really, according to the new norms, Medjugorje now has the highest possible approval coming from the Church. So I think people should, who are devoted to Medjugorje, and I have met people who have had deep conversions. One of our pastors a few years ago revealed that he received his vocation there to be a priest at Medjugorje. So I think that we have to be open to this, and just the fact that the fruits have been recognized, nothing stands in the way of people being devoted and reading the messages that have been approved by the papal delegate. This is all very positive. I think the Church wants to see people go to confession and be devoted to the Eucharist and be devoted to peace and reconciliation. So I think this is really what I see coming from the view of a pastoral concern.
We're talking today with Dr. Robert Festigi, professor of Mariology from the Sacred Heart Major Seminary in Detroit. And one of the things, Robert, that I really want to get your take on, because your knowledge of these documents throughout history is really unparalleled, in my opinion. We see a nihil obstat judgment, meaning from Latin, nothing obstructs or nothing gets in the way. And one of the things that some people have been raising the question of is that with a nihil obstat, why would you give a statement like that saying that there are no problems with it and then have a list of six or so caveats or things that must be acknowledged or dealt with in the same document? How do we have a nihil obstat where nothing obstructs, where they have some clarifications that need to be made?
Yes, I think that's a very good question, Michael. I think some of that came through in the press conference with Cardinal Fernandez, and he said, well, with these revelations and even statements from mystics, there's a human element. And so sometimes intermixed with profound insights and spiritual counsels, there sometimes are problematic statements. And he gave the example of something said by St. John of the Cross, that, you know, at the deepest level of the soul is the substance of God. And you know, but that could be understood, I think, in a benevolent sense as a deep indwelling of God. Mm-hmm. And theosis, as it's called in Greek, divinization. And then he mentioned something by Thérèse of Lisieux saying, well, we have no merit. I have no merit of my own. And then he quoted the Council of Trent that says we do have true merit, even though it's dependent upon God. Well, but then he explained in a rather fatherly way that we have to understand that sometimes language is not always precise in spiritual matters. So I think we could appreciate that. But regarding one of the caveats, I know Dr. Mark Miravalli and I have spoken about this, both with Medjugorje and also the approval of the Rosa Mystica apparitions in Italy. There's a great caution about Marian mediation, and that the Rosa Mystica one said that in the action of grace in the soul, no mediation is possible, not even that of the Blessed Virgin Mary. But I'm actually going to write to Cardinal Fernandez about this. Maybe I'll never get a reply, but what do we say with all of those papal statements affirming Mary as the mediatrix of all graces? Even Pope Francis in last year, May 13th, 2023, sent a message to the Archbishop in Sassari, Sardinia, where he said one of the most ancient titles was precisely mediatrix of all graces. So if Mary is the mediatrix of all grace, she's the mediatrix of the grace, of the sanctifying grace. August 5th of this year, in a homily for the Feast of Our Lady of Snows at Santa Maria Maggiore, Pope Francis said, Mary is the mediatrix of the grace which comes only from Christ through the working of the Holy Spirit. Well, that's sanctifying grace. So she is the mediatrix. She's not the source of grace, but she can mediate the grace. I mean, after all, priests mediate sanctifying grace through the sacraments. So there's sometimes questions about this, but I think it's an overly cautious attitude. This also surfaced at Vatican II, you know, that the title mediatrix applied to Mary, well, that challenges 1 Timothy 2:5. There's one mediator between God and the human race, Christ Jesus. But as it was explained even in Lumen Gentium 62 at Vatican II, that this does not prohibit a sharing or a participation in the mediation of Christ. So Mary participates or shares in the mediation of Christ in the most intimate way, through her maternal mediation, as John Paul II put it. So I think this is going to generate a healthy discussion about Marian mediation. There's also a concern about Mary giving specific instructions to the parish, the parish management, and that it was said, certainly Mary should respect the authority of the pastor and so on. Well, I mean, one response to that would be, well, Mary is the mother of priests, and she has this authority. Then I was thinking of what happened with miraculous medal, St. Catherine Labre was having some resistance from Father Aladel, her confessor and spiritual director, and the Blessed Mother said something like, well, he is my servant, but he should be frightened that he's displeasing me. So that was a very specific instruction. But regarding the approval of the supernatural, I published an article, it's online on Ecce Mater Tua, on Episcopal affirmations of the supernatural. And some of them were quite explicit, like Bishop Laurence, 1862, approving Lourdes. He said the Blessed Virgin Mary did really appear to Bernadette Subaru, and he gives the date. So there are all these affirmations, but I understand the DDF is saying, well, when that strong language is used, people will have the impression they must believe it. And belief in private revelations is not mandatory, not obligatory.
But it's always been optional, from what I understand, the way that the Church has always proposed this. Even in the statement from David L. Ricken regarding the apparitions in Champion, Wisconsin, in 1859, at the very end of his statement, he says, but not obligatory for the Christian faithful. So this has been a tradition of the Church, of course, and an understanding of private revelation, that it's never an obligation. So I'm not quite sure why they feel the need to double down on this right now. But we're talking today with Dr. Robert Festigi, professor of Mariology. And one question I want to ask in a different way, Robert, was related to nihil obstats in general. In the history and tradition of the Church, have we seen many nihil obstat statements that have requests for reconsideration or caveats or special clarifications? Do we see that as a common practice, where we get a nihil obstat and we say, well, nothing gets in the way except for these six things? Do we see that in past statements?
Yeah, I think when there's a nihil obstat of a book, there's a kind of a statement saying this means that there's the nihil obstat or the imprimatur means nothing's contrary to faith and morals. It doesn't necessarily mean that the Church agrees with all of the opinions, but the opinions are not threatening to the faith. So I think that this is it's like nothing stands in the way, but these are our concerns about these particular messages and so on. But maybe this is a little different because you're dealing with something that has a human element, and that's what was admitted by Cardinal Fernandez, and that even with permission to publish books by mystics, you know, like you think of like the Mystical City of God, that was briefly put on the index of Venerable Sister Maria of Agreda, but I mean there's. Then it was allowed to be published, removed from the index, which is a kind of like nihil obstat. Blessed Solanus Casey read that book very devoutly, with great devotion. But certainly it doesn't mean that all of her statements made about the life of Jesus and Mary have to be taken as historical videotapes. In other words, it's understood that it's a kind of literature that involves deep spiritual insights, but we don't necessarily have to believe the details of her revelations. So maybe that would be the parallel with mystical writings, or like the approval to read the revelations of St. Bridget of Sweden. And this is a genre of mystical writing where they say nothing's contrary to the faith, but there might be some things that are a little bit exaggerated and so on. I mean, I know the postulator for the cause of the beatification of Maria of Agreda, Father Stefano Cecchini, and he said that, well, they're holding it up while the DDF studies her writings. Some people think that she has an exaggerated Mariology, and it's not in conformity with that of Vatican II. So this would, but people are permitted to read the Mystical City of God. So I think that might be the parallel.
We're talking today with Dr. Robert Festigi, professor of Mariology from Sacred Heart Major Seminary. And Robert, I think that one of the things that's crossed my mind is that when they talk about mystics and sort of the messages that a saint or a mystic might claim to receive from God, there's some sort of maybe misinterpretation or putting a human spin on it somehow, or not necessarily transmitting the message theologically in the fullness that it should be. But in the case of Medjugorje, we have six visionaries. Of course, now not all the visionaries receive all the messages at the same time. But what is your understanding of how it works with the visionaries all receiving messages from Mary, especially in those earlier days? How do we see sort of a miscommunication or the theology not being exactly adding up correctly, needing a clarification when you have six visionaries reporting the same message?
Yes, exactly. Well, the commission, the ruling commission, which has now been leaked, you know, for several years.
That's right.
The majority, I think, with just a few exceptions, thought the first seven apparitions showed the signs of the supernatural.
Right.
But there was great skepticism, or only two. The subsequent ones going on for over 40 years. Two said these are not supernatural, two of those on the commission, and the others just said non discernendum. We don't determine this. We don't discern this. You know, they just were like neutral on them.
That's
and
right.
So on. But I suppose with the nihil obstat attitude is, well, you can read these messages for spiritual edification. This is what Cardinal Fernandez said. But the Church is not saying, making a statement that they are supernatural. I suppose individual people could believe that they're supernatural, and because, you know, what there are good fruits. What is the source? What is the, you know, it's a good tree then.
Yes.
But I guess it's the case, it's the way of reading private revelations that, yes, they could be approved and read, but they're not put on the same level as divine revelation. So I think that's maybe the caution that is being given.
Thank you. We've been talking today with Dr. Robert Vestigi, a great conversation today about the new announcement related to Medjugorje, the apparitions being claimed since 1981 in Bosnia-Herzegovina. And as we wrap up the interview today, Robert, talking about what going forward for Medjugorje, I think that a lot of people have, devotees of Medjugorje, have celebrated in a big way this highest level of approval from this new document that was released in May, and which we've talked about on previous programs on this show. But has Medjugorje been restricted a little bit going forward in the sense that no longer you can go to Medjugorje and talk to the visionaries, and the messages are supposed to be viewed with caution without the assumption that it's actually coming from Mary? Do we see that the Vatican in some way, having the messages need to be approved by the apostolic administrator before they're disseminated, do we see a little bit more control on Medjugorje now by the Vatican, despite this big approval that we just saw?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, some people are saying, well, what changed, you know, on September 17th, I think it was, when this message. But I suppose what has changed is the Church recognizes the spiritual fruits and yes. recognizes that the messages can be read that have been approved for spiritual edification. And I think you can't control what people think inwardly. If they believe these are coming from the Blessed Mother, they're going to believe that. And I think the Holy See recognizes that. But they want to be, you know, there is a certain degree of a pastoral control, or let's say pastoral management. If there are some of these new messages that seem to be problematical, there will be a sense, you know, a process of discernment. And so the apostolic delegate will have to discern that. And maybe that's something good. But, you know, some of the enemies of Medjugorje have misinterpreted some of the messages that Mary said she loves all people of all religions. Mm. Well, that's not religious indifferentism. It's just saying Mary cares for Hindus and Buddhists and so on, but she is the mother of all. And Leo XIII, in one encyclical, Ad Utricem, said that the Holy Apostle John under the cross represented in some way the whole human race. So when Mary was given as the mother of the beloved disciple, in a way, she was made being given as the mother of the whole human race, but especially the faithful. So I think Cardinal Fernandez did allude to this in his press conference. So sometimes people who are hostile interpret some of the statements in a very hostile way. But we have to understand the nature of private revelation, the nature of mystical language, and there's a whole history behind this. And so we could read these messages and draw from them great spiritual fruit, but the Church wants to make sure that if there are some that could be misinterpreted, maybe they'll the apostolic delegate, the Archbishop, I think, is Cavalli, now will say, no, I don't think this should be published.
That's right. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Robert Vestigi, for joining us on today's program. Thank you for breaking down in such a detailed way this new announcement coming out of Rome related to Medjugorje, the apparitions that have been reported since 1981 in Bosnia-Herzegovina. We can talk all day about this, Robert, and I'm sure we'll be talking again, but this was huge news, a big moment for the Church and the history of the Church. So I think that many faithful around the world are excited and are learning more about this new devotion moving forward. We're so grateful to you for joining us on today's program.
No, it's been my privilege. Yes, I think there's more that could be said, but we had a good discussion. So thank you, Michael. God bless you.
God bless. And that was Dr. Robert Vestigi, a professor of Mariology from Sacred Heart Major Seminary. I always love talking to Robert. Absolutely amazing to pick his brain on some of these big news items related to Marian apparitions and Mary. And check out our book together, Virgin Mother Queen, which was published from Ave Maria Press, which is a discussion of some of the highly approved apparitions in church history. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be looking at the question of the week. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. Hey, I love getting your questions. People write in from around the world with questions about miracles happening in today's world and those that have happened centuries ago. I love getting the email questions, but I also love answering questions in person. I give talks around the country, maybe as many as 20 per year at different parishes, shrines, conferences. And I talk usually about Eucharistic miracles these days or Marian apparitions or something like this. And then I open it up to questions at the end. And it's fascinating to hear what people are thinking about. And I do my best to answer them. But we got a great email question this past week from Martha. Martha asks, why does the Dicastery for the Cause of Saints approve miracles, but the Dicastery for the Doctrine of the Faith does not? Thank you, Martha. Now, this is a huge question. Somebody needs to answer this question, who's not me, somebody in the Vatican, because we see a little bit of a split, you might say, a bifurcation in Rome, the way they view miracles. Because, as we all know, in sainthood causes, two miracles are needed, one for beatification, one for canonization. That shows that the future saint is in heaven with God. And so that's why they approve miracles related to canonization causes. But then on the other hand, the Dicastery for the Doctrine of the Faith, we just learned as of this past May, does not any longer approve anything as supernatural or miraculous. So there are no more miracles being acknowledged by the Dicastery for the Doctrine of the Faith. So why the big difference? And even Cardinal Fernandez, in his recent press conference, sort of acknowledged this fact. He said that, I forget what year he used as the breaking or the mark point, but he said 1980, there have been so many perhaps hundreds of cases related to miracles that have been found in the Dicastery for the Causes of Saints, when his congregation has only found four cases of supernatural Marian apparition. So he was kind of making the point that it's a very rare thing to find a true Marian apparition. And therefore, he said, he was making the point that they no longer have to worry too much about that based on the percentages. And so perhaps that factors into it. It's a lot of work to determine if Mary, in fact, appeared at a place. And it certainly is a lot easier now to just leave that part out, as these new norms do. They say it's no longer necessary to talk about that. But with the causes of saints, you need those miracles to show that the person's in heaven with God. So it is a little bit of an inconsistency between the two offices of the Vatican. So we'll see if that ever gets resolved or rectified and they get on the same page in one way or another. But as of right now, you have miracles in one half and no miracles in the other half. That's a little bit of a complication or scandal, depending on how you want to look at that. But thanks, Martha, for your question. And if you have a question for the Miracle Hunter, you can send me an email to questions@miraclehunter.com, and maybe I'll be answering your question on the air next week. Let's take a look at the 365 Days with Mary Project. We do this every week. We talk about a Marian devotion from around the world that lines up exactly to the day's day. We all know Fatima, May 13th, or Lourdes, February 11th, or Guadalupe, December 12th. But believe it or not, there's a different Marian feast day or commemoration that lines up to each day of the calendar year. And so for today's date, we have Our Lady of the Ash from Grado in Spain in the 17th century. And the story goes that in stories past, people came on pilgrimage to the sanctuary for a novena. And if all the households were occupied, visitors would spend the night in granaries, bread bins, and tenadas in honor of the Virgin of the Ash. Two festivals are held, one on September 8th and one on the 28th of the same month, preceded by a St. Michael novena, which starts at 4 in the afternoon and took the name of San Miguel Nino. And the novena begins on September 21st, ends on the 29th, the feast of the Archangel Michael, Gabriel, and Raphael, images of whom are found in this church. A booklet, Novena of Fresno, by an anonymous author, is widespread in this area and serves as a guide for this novena. And that is Our Lady of the Ash from Grado in Spain in the 17th century. And the miracle of the day occurred on September 24th, 1616, in Berzo Inferiore in Italy. And that is a story of a Marian apparition to Marta Damiole that happened there in Italy, where the Blessed Virgin was said to appear to this witness. And that's the miracle for the day. Stay tuned to other miracles of the day. We'll be answering those each and every week. And the might-be saint of the day today is Blessed Francis Piani from Italy in 1428 and lived until 1507 in Italy. He was born in 1424 in Caldarola in Mazzarella in Italy. And Francis grew up in a poor farming community where he saw many people become enslaved to high-interest moneylenders and pawn dealers. He was a Franciscan friar who was known as a powerful preacher and a peacemaker between feuding people, families, and clans, and he said his secret to peacemaking was to talk to the people by day and spend his nights in prayer. And he worked with Blessed Bernardino de Feltre to set up the alternatives to pawn shops. And he died on September 12, 1507, in the Franciscan convent in Colfano in Italy. And many miracles were reported at his grave, and devotion was recorded as early as 1511, but he was beatified through the confirmation of his cult by Pope Urban VII in 1634. And for people who want to find out more about They Might Be Saints, you can tune into the next episode of They Might Be Saints, Venerable Mary Angeline Teresa McCrory, whose life of holiness and service to the elderly poor has led to a groundswell of support for sainthood. I'll be looking at her legacy and the miracles attributed to her. That's on Wednesday, coming up, They Might Be Saints. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be talking with Father Eliseo Gonzalez, the vice postulator for the cause for Bishop Alphonse Gallegos. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. We've done several programs on EWTN, more than several, you might say, over 20 programs about They Might Be Saints. That lines up to my book, They Might Be Saints, and we've done a series called They Might Be Saints about Americans on the path to sainthood and the search for canonization miracles. And we've traveled all over the country and worked with various canonization causes on these programs. And one of my all-time favorite ones was one we filmed a few years ago in California. We filmed with Father Eliseo Gonzalez, the vice postulator for Bishop Alphonse Gallegos, and we did a program on his life. We had an actor who looked just like the real Bishop Gallegos. Gallegos and had a great time filming that one. And Father Eliseo Gonzalez was such a big part of that production. We're so excited to have him back on the radio show here today to talk to us, to give us an update on the canonization cause of Bishop Gallegos, to find out how that's progressing, and to reintroduce to all of you the life of this future American saint. Welcome back to the program, Father Eliseo.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me, Michael. Great to be with you today, and a lot of good memories from the filming of that documentary. Thank you so much for your time and dedication to these causes of the American future saints, God willing.
Absolutely. It was such a great experience to be out there and to meet people associated with that cause and to learn about the life of Bishop Alphonse Gallegos. And many Americans may still not know the names of these 24, 25 people on the path to sainthood, but people should really get to know this future saint, Bishop Alphonse Gallegos. For those people who don't know, Father Eliseo, take us back a little bit. Who was the man, Bishop Alphonse Gallegos?
Yes, just briefly, he was born in Albuquerque, New Mexico in 1931, and then he grew up in Los Angeles in a very difficult area in the inner city of Los Angeles in Watts, and that's where he got to know the Augustine Recollects, the religious community he belonged to, which had a parish there in Watts. And then he entered the order, and he lived in Kansas City, Kansas, did the novitiate. Then he was ordained a priest here in Suffern, New York, on the East Coast, upstate New York, about half an hour outside of New York City. And he served there in the monastery interior ministry with the students, formation of future priests. Then he went back to California as to his old former parish as a pastor in Watts, in the inner city where he grew up. And then there he did a wonderful work there in the parish, reaching out to the poor, to people who were strayed away from the faith, and very difficult situation in early 70s in that area. So he made a name for himself, and then he was went to Cristo Rey, another parish there in Los Angeles. Then he went to the state capital of California, and there in Sacramento, to work at the state level with the Hispanic ministry at the state level. The Conference of Hispanic Affairs. He was the first head of that department. And then later he was named bishop, a consecrated bishop, on November 4th, 1981. And he served there in the Auxiliary Bishop of Sacramento, the Diocese of Sacramento. And he died in fame of sanctity on October 6th, 1991. And his mortal remains are currently there in Sacramento in Our Lady of Guadalupe Shrine. And his cause was opened in 2005, and we continue to work promoting, making his life known.
We're talking today with Father Eliseo Gonzalez, the vice postulator for the cause for Bishop Alphonse Gallegos. That was an excellent summary of the incredible packed life of Bishop Gallegos. And I think one of the things that struck me in filming with you in there in California was the impact that Bishop Gallegos had on the community. Whether it was just walking the streets and visiting with people in their homes and spending time with the faithful, but also going into some of the rougher situations, perhaps situations where the gangbangers or others were gathering, and he would go out and greet them and bring Christ to the streets and invite them to Mass. Talk a little bit about the outreach of Bishop Gallegos to the community.
Yes, Michael, exactly. That's what very identifies Bishop Gallegos. He was very close to the people, and he had definitely a great impact in their life. He was a man of hope, of joy, and he was of kindness, warmth, and love. He was there with the people, just visiting their homes, as you mentioned, being with them. He was very keen on that the pastor, the priest, the bishop should be out with the people, you know, in line with our current Pope Francis. You know, to be out there with the faithful, that they need to feel the closeness of their pastors, of their shepherds. And that was Bishop Gallegos, and he lived his motto, which was the commandment of Jesus, love one another. That pretty summarizes who Bishop Gallegos was. And he had a great impact on the youth. Many of them went to further their education. Before they met Bishop, they were out in the streets and the gangs and, you know, involved in other kinds of things away from the church, from God. And he brought them back to God, to the church, and they became police officers, doctors, lawyers, and many, many other good things. He instilled hope and joy to the community and the joy of Jesus Christ.
Absolutely. We've been talking about Bishop Alphonse Gallegos, the Bishop of the Barrio, as we might say, or they say in California, about this incredible bishop who's on the path to sainthood. Now, Father Aliseo, you've served as the vice postulator for the canonization cause for Bishop Gallegos, which means you gather all the documents and you put together the positio, that position paper that was sent to Rome to be looked at by the dicastery now of the causes of saints, then gave him the recognition of venerable, which means that his life of heroic virtue is formally established by Rome. And talk to us about the next step. I know that's perhaps the even harder step, the finding of miracles. How has it gone since that time he was declared venerable? How have you worked to spread the word on Bishop Gallegos, and what have you found related to some of the miracles and favors that are being reported?
Yes, Michael, it's been a joy. As you know, right now we're in search of, being on your show, Miracle Hunter. We're on the search for a miracle for his beatification, and a second miracle for his canonization. There have been many favors. We've been we have a webpage, bishopgallegos.org, set up. We have a Facebook as well, Bishop Alfonso Gallegos, set up to spread his famous sanctity and share testimonies about favors received and people sharing his life story. So people get to know him and pray for his canonization and seek his intercession. And there's many favors continue to arrive, stories, testimonies of how Bishop Gallegos has continued to this day. Here I'm out in New Jersey now, in the parish where I am. People, on weekends, giving out holy cards of Bishop Gallegos, speaking about him, putting information in our parish bulletin, and spreading the word, and many interesting stories are coming to us. Bishop Gallegos is continuing to intercede. There's no miracle documented yet, but a lot of very interesting stories, possible miracles we need to follow up on. So we just continue to make his life known and on social media. And this, thank you for having us on Miracle Hunter, and it's a good way to share the life story of Bishop Gallegos. Hopefully the miracles will occur in the near future.
That's right. It's been my great honor to work with the various vice postulators for causes around the United States, including Father Eliseo. They are the true miracle hunters out there looking for a miracle for their future saint whose causes that they support. So it's a great thing to pray for. And for people can check out on EWTN On Demand, the episode of They Might Be Saints on Bishop Alphonse Gallegos. His incredible life, and now the cause looks for that search for, has that search for miracles, and we will be praying through his intercession for miracles, and you can report them to Father Eliseo. Now, again, Father, for people who want to learn more about the life of Bishop Alphonse Gallegos, where can they go to learn more and perhaps find a prayer from his life?
Yes, Michael, they can learn more. We have a webpage set up, Bishop Gallegos, GALLEGOS.org, bishopgallegos.org. They can visit that webpage, and we have a prayer there, and they can pray for his cause. And also we have a Facebook page, Bishop Alfonso in Spanish, Gallegos, Bishop Alfonso Gallegos Facebook. They can also follow Facebook about regarding Bishop Gallegos.
Wonderful. Well, we're so grateful to you, Father Eliseo Gonzalez, Vice Postulator for the Bishop Alphonse Gallegos canonization cause, for joining us on today's program, and God bless you on your great work in making this future American saint known to the world. God bless.
Thank you, Michael, for having us, and October 6th would be his death anniversary, so please continue to pray for his cause. Thank you, Michael. God bless you and all your listeners.
And that was Father Eliseo Gonzalez, the vice postulator for Bishop Alphonse Gallegos. BishopGallegos.org is the website. Check that out. And that's all the time we have for today's show. If you missed any of this episode or want to catch up on past episodes, you can go to EWTN.com/radio, check out the audio archives, or download the free EWTN app. I'd like to thank our guest today, Dr. Robert Festigi, professor of Mariology at Sacred Heart Major Seminary, and co-author with me of the book Virgin Mother Queen. Pick that one up at EWTNRC.com. You can, thanks to him for joining us to talk about this brand new statement on Medjugorje coming out of the Vatican. That was huge news this past week. And Father Eliseo Gonzalez talking to us about the Bishop of the Barrio, Bishop Alphonse Gallegos. And check that one out at bishopgallegos.org. You can tune into my program, Explore with the Miracle Hunter. I travel to London. We explore the historic city and walk the footsteps of St. Thomas Becket, whose remarkable life and heroic death were followed with an overflowing of grace and miraculous events. That's tonight at 6 p.m. Eastern Time on EWTN Television. And I'd like to thank you today for joining me on Miracle Hunter, where from claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt. Talk to you next week.